And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio, both your prayerful and financial support that's kept us on the air for over 40 years and allows me to be here on Wednesdays and talk to great folks like Anthony DiStefano, who is going to join us today. Anthony is an American author, television host, and activist. He has written 5 best-selling Christian books for adults, including A Travel Guide to Heaven and 10 Prayers God Always Says Yes To. He has also written 16 best-selling books for children, including The Donkey That No One Could Ride and Little Star. Welcome back to the show, Anthony. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And the latest book is called Christmas in Heaven. For those that are watching on Facebook, you can see a copy of the cover there, beautiful cover, and beautifully illustrated, written by Anthony and illustrated by Bernadette Carstensen. And we just had a minute to chat, Anthony, before we talk live here. And, you know, thought it was interesting that we're going to talk about a Christmas book the first week in November. Obviously, it's, you know, the publisher wants to promote it in order to make some sales. But when I read the book, it's as much about All Saints Day as it is about Christmas.
Yeah, it is. And I apologize to those listeners who get annoyed when they start celebrating Christmas before even Advent begins. But that's the world we're living in order to make sure that people have Christmas presents in time. They have to do that. But yeah, but I agree with what you're saying. This book is also serves as an introduction to the saints. It's a Christmas book first and foremost. You know, I always am interested in writing books about the true meaning of Christmas. Christmas has obviously been secularized almost beyond recognition, and I've written several books already about the Nativity. This time I wanted to do something different, so I decided to focus on the fact that Christmas is Jesus' birthday, and that in heaven there's a huge celebration going on. So in this story, I show a little boy who's sad because his grandmother has died, and it's Christmas time, and you know, he's wondering how she's celebrating Christmas in heaven. And so his grandfather, who's the husband of the woman who's died, sits the boy on his knee and tries to paint a consoling picture of him, of heaven and the big celebration that's going on there with all the angels and the saints and, of course, Our Lady and Jesus and his grandmother, too. So yes, this book is about the true meaning of Christmas, but it's also an introduction to the saints and the angels. And it's a book about grieving with hope in the resurrection and life everlasting in heaven. So there's a lot of things that we're dealing with this book. And yes, a big part of the book certainly is saints, and so it was good that we, you know, just celebrated All Saints Day last week and tied in very nicely.
No, it did. And as I'm going through the book, St. Martha is mentioned a few times, and I was like, the woman didn't get a break when she was on earth, and now it seems like she's even busier in heaven. Yeah.
Yes. Well, yeah, she is. She does serve a little bit as a kind of comic relief in the book.
Yeah.
You know, it's a heavy subject. You know, to talk about death in a children's book is a tricky thing to do. You know what I mean? I mean, you don't want to scare children or anything like that. But yet, death is such an important subject, and children have to grieve just like adults have to grieve, and we could talk about that. But the point is that I wanted it to be a fun book and a happy book, because ultimately, the Christian view of life and death is extraordinarily optimistic. We don't believe that death has the final word. We believe the final word is resurrection and life everlasting in heaven. So in order to make the book positive and upbeat, the way I accomplished that was through a playful way that we portrayed some of the saints. And as you mentioned there, we have St. Martha constantly cleaning and cooking and doing chores just as she did in the gospel.
Yeah.
And we could talk more about that.
No, it was interesting. And, you know, you bring up a subject, and I had an opportunity to talk at a men's retreat over the weekend. They brought me in as a guest speaker, and I actually, part of the talk dealt with that in that we rarely talk about the final four things, you know, heaven and hell, death and judgment. And I think when we do, even as adults, it changes our perspective on life. And here's an opportunity now for, you know, parents or grandparents to talk to their kids or grandkids about death in a way that's not scary, not scary at all. And so I think the book should be well received. I forgot to mention where folks can get it. The name of the book is Christmas in Heaven, written by our guest, Anthony DiStefano. It's published by Sophia Institute Press, available at sophiainstitute.com. Locally here in the Philadelphia area, I encourage our listeners to go over to the St. Jude Shop in Havertown and pick up your copy there. If it's going to take you a while to drive there, I just recommend you call them first to make sure they got it in stock. And if they don't, they can get it for you pretty quickly, especially in time for Christmas. I think, Anthony, it would be a great book for parents and grandparents to give their kids for Christmas this year.
I really hope so. To extend upon the point that you were making, all of us have to deal with death and grieving at some point. None of us gets out of this life alive, as the saying goes. And children, they have to deal with it too, because they have to deal with the death of pets and the death of grandparents, sometimes the death of parents, sometimes the death of people who are close to them. They also have to deal with lots of kinds of permanent loss, moving to different neighborhoods, moving to, you know, changing schools. All of those are kinds of things that children grieve over. And you know, we have to remember that those sad feelings, they don't go away. You can't just sweep them under the rug. If you sweep them under the rug, you know what happens to those feelings is they grow, they fester, and over a period of time they transform into complexes and depressions and phobias and all kinds of psychological problems. And fortunately, as Christians, you know, as I said, we believe that death doesn't have the final word. The final word is resurrection and life everlasting in heaven. And that's a tremendously consoling belief that can help us deal with grief in a very healthy way. And it's a great gift that we could give to our children early on. We always want to protect our children. Well, one of the best ways to protect them, because we can't protect them from all the suffering they're going to face in life, but if we give them this hope is so important, give them hope that death isn't the end, then that's going to protect them throughout their entire life.
That's right. And we mentioned that there's a number of saints in the book. We already mentioned Saint Martha. A quick look at the glossary in the back. It looks like there's 26 different saints that you managed to cram into this book, which is wonderful.
Yeah, there are a lot. You know, I wanted to include, you know, since there's a big birthday celebration going on in heaven, you might as well have, you know, all the famous saints are there. I try to get people that everyone would recognize, like St. Michael the Archangel, St. Peter, St. Joseph, St. Francis, St. Patrick, St. Therese, St. Joan of Arc, naturally Our Lady. But I've also included some lesser-known saints like St. Honoré, for instance, who's the patron saint of baking.
Yep.
Because, of course, you need a birthday cake if there's going to be a birthday party. And I included saints like St. Gregory and St. Cecilia, who the patron saints of music, because you've got to have singing at a birthday party. So, you know, and all the saints in this book are doing the things that they're most famous for. So we have St. Francis surrounded by a bunch of animals. We have St. Nick putting presents under the tree. We have St. Anthony finding a present that was lost. We have St. Joseph building a manger because, of course, he was a carpenter. We have St. Therese handing out flowers to the different guests. So, you know, the idea, and as you just said, there's a glossary at the end of the book with a simple little small paragraph for each angel and saint with a little thumbnail illustration so that children and adults could refer back to the book. And each description tries to capture the essence of who the saint is, what the saint's known for, and why they're pictured doing the things that they're doing in the book. So yeah, in addition to being a fun and entertaining book for kids about Christmas in heaven, I think it can also help teachers and families in their catechesis about the saints.
Very good. How come you try to tackle so many topics in one book? It seems like a lot to cram in. Was there a reason for doing that?
You know, I think all these ideas kind of came together organically. You know, when we think about Christmas, you know, we think about Jesus. When we think about Jesus, we think about heaven. When we think about heaven, we think about angels and saints, and yes, we think about death too. It's just part of the whole spiritual package. It's part of telling the whole story about life, which includes not only life here, but death and the end things, that judgment, heaven, hell, which I've covered in some of my adult books, nonfiction books. I've written a book on heaven. I've written a book called Hell, a Guide. I'm going to be writing a book on purgatory for adults over the next year. So I'm very, very interested in talking about these last things, these end things. And as I said, it's a very important thing to teach children. And you know, it's very good to teach children about heaven in particular at an early age. The subject of heaven, when you think about it, is so simple for children to understand. You know, heaven is just God's home. When people die, those people, if they love God, they go to live in God's home. They just move homes. They go from their home here on earth to God's home in heaven. And that's something that all children can understand, because children are very familiar with the concept of going over grandma's house or going over their aunt's apartment or going to a different building to go to school. They understand the concept of moving from place to place. So the more we're able to show children how wonderful a place heaven is, then the more consolation they'll experience when they're grieving about their loved ones who are moving to that place.
The book itself is beautiful, Anthony. I mentioned the illustrator is Bernadette Carstensen. Have you worked with her before?
I have never worked with her. You know, I've written, I think, there's something really like 17 or 18 children's books now. The bio that you read, I think, it's a little bit outdated there, because I've got so many of these, and I try to work with the best illustrator for the project. So when I write books about animals, for instance, the donkey that no one could ride, or the puppy that no one wanted, or the sheep that no one could find, or Joseph's donkey, I always try to use the artists who are fantastic at doing Disney quality artwork for animals. But with this book, I used a wonderful lady named Bernadette Carstensen. She's a very well-known Catholic artist. She's done many church altarpieces and religious paintings, especially of Our Lady and the Saints. She got a great big family. They live in California. She's expecting another baby right now.
Wow.
And you know, for this book, I wanted to create, as I said before, a happy book, a bright book, an inspiring book, a colorful book with vintage-style illustrations, almost in like the tradition of Norman Rockwell. You know, and I wanted it to be have the book to have a very classical feel, and I wanted someone who could also be a little whimsical, someone who loves our faith but who wasn't afraid to be a little playful, and have a sense of humor, who can make the illustrations not only poignant, but also fun. After all, we want to show children that heaven is a happy place, so the illustrations should be happy too. And I think Bernadette did just a first-rate, fantastic job.
No, I would agree. Each page is better than the last, and especially when you get to the, you know, you mentioned it's Christmas, you got to have a birthday cake for Jesus, and 2,000 candles. How long would that take to fire up?
Well, that's again where the humor comes in. I have St. Matthew up all night counting the candles for the birthday cake. That St. John, who talked about light so much in his gospel, he's lighting the candles. So I tried to weave in what the saints did in a kind of a humorous way. We have St. Francis of Assisi barreling through the door with a whole crowd of sheep and donkey and cats and dogs and puppies, and you have St. Martha following behind him with a broomstick trying to sweep because presumably the animals are making a big mess and she can't do it. So, of course, the St. Jude, who's the patron saint of hopeless causes, he helps her out, comes to the rescue with a vacuum cleaner. So these are all kind of a playful way take on these saints that I hope brings a smile to the face of adults and children.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's like when you talk about St. Matthew's keeping track of how many candles have been lit, and I couldn't help but think of the character in The Chosen, and sitting there with his little pad, and it's like a stroke for each candle as it's being lit. I thought that was pretty pretty interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hope adults, you know, one of the things I try to do in these children's books, one of the reasons why I think my children's books are popular, some of them have been, you know, pretty big bestsellers, like Our Lady's Wardrobe, for instance, or The Donkey That No One Could Ride. I mean, they really have been popular, not just here, but in other countries, too. And some of them have been crossovers. They're not just with Catholic audiences, but with Christian audiences, and even in the mainstream. And I think the reason for that is that I write these books every bit as much for adults as I write for children.
Exactly.
You know, I'm very aware that children don't always read these books themselves. they've got their parents reading these books to them, the grandparents are reading these books to them, the older siblings are reading these books to them. And if it's a good book, hopefully, the child asks the adult to read the book to them many times, sometimes 10, 20 times.
Right.
So, you know, you have this chance to evangelize all these adults who are being forced to read these books to the children. And I don't want to miss an opportunity to remind them of the truths that they've been taught growing up. And so I always make sure that there's humor in the book and that there's deeper levels of meaning that maybe the children don't quite get, but that an astute adult who's reading the book will get. And then at the end of the book say, wow, I'm glad I read that because it cheered me up or it reminded me of something that I needed to be reminded of.
Yeah, this is it's one of those books I can see it. I know my wife really loves to decorate for Christmas, and the decorations are everywhere. And on the coffee table is always a copy of, you know, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and probably a lot of people read that to their kids or grandkids. But I can see this book, you know, being part of somebody's collection that would come out every year, and have an opportunity. You know, probably the first time they get it, they'll want it read to them multiple times. But if you put it away with your Christmas decorations and bring it back out again every year, it could be one of those traditions.
Thank you. That's a great, great compliment. I've actually got, this is my fifth children's Christmas book, believe it or not. My fifth one, because Christmas is so important, and it is the favorite time of year of so many people. And I've always admired, Charles Dickens, who used to write Christmas books every year. Of course, the one that we remember him for is A Christmas Carol, with the story of Ebenezer Scrooge. But if you're able to write an effective Christmas story, then it can become part of a Christmas tradition in someone's house, and people remember that. And their childhood is, you know, it's a golden, innocent time period, and it's a wonderful, most beautiful time of many people's lives. And to be able to give them something that's part of their childhood is very gratifying to me as a writer.
I can imagine. Any time, you know, God has chosen us to do something in life and you get that positive feedback, you know, it's that confirmation that you're on the right track and doing what God has actually asked you to do is pretty cool. Whether it's writing a book, hosting a radio show, whatever it is that God calls us to do, getting that positive reinforcement is always a blessing.
Sometimes it's so good. Like some of my adult books I've written, and I'm not trying to brag about this, but because I'm not, I don't think I'm any great writer, but I've written a couple of books that have about heaven, for instance, or about prayers that God says yes to, and I've had sometimes people come up to me and say that the book made a big difference in their life. And I've had children, the joy of having children come up to me and say, this is my favorite book. And it, you know what? It validates your whole life. Just like you just said, you know that you're doing what God wants you to do. And that's the thing that gives the most happiness and the most peace. To know, this is the key to happiness. To know that you're doing what God put you here to do. It's the greatest joy in the world, and nothing can touch it. Even all the suffering that we have in life, nothing could touch you if you know that you're doing what God wants you to do.
Amen. In the story, the grandfather talking to the grandson about the grandmother who has passed, and she's already in heaven. And you mentioned a few minutes ago that you're writing a book on purgatory, and you have before you actually get into the book in the front here, you talk a bit about purgatory. What was the purpose of that?
Well, yes, it's very important because, even though this is a book about heaven, I don't want to give the impression that I don't believe in purgatory. Well, that purgatory is a doctrine of the Catholic Church. It's been a doctrine of the Church since the very beginning, and it's based on the fact that, as Revelation 21 says, nothing unclean can enter heaven. The fact is that there are people who have died who have been saved by Christ, but who still have on their soul some stain of sins that have already been forgiven, and sometimes these souls might have an attachment to those sins that have been forgiven. Purgatory is the place where we get cleaned up of those imperfections so that when we see God face to face, we can do it without any shame or guilt or attachment to what is unholy. Now, that could be a difficult concept to explain to children, and I did my best at the beginning of the book to do that with this little note. I explained that You know, if you're going to go meet the president or the pope or somebody important, or if you're going to attend a wedding or a big party of some sort, you will presumably wash your face and comb your hair and maybe change out of your gym clothes before you do that.
Right.
Well, heaven is the biggest party of all time, and we're going to be meeting the most important person of all, the Lord. So purgatory is the place where we get cleaned up for that. And I think that's the easiest way for children to understand. We've all been to Catholic funerals where the speakers tend to, and any kind of funeral, where the speakers tend to eulogize and canonize the deceased person. And that's understandable, and I'm sympathetic to them. And you know, but you never want to deprive the person who has died of the benefit of our prayers, because they very well may need those prayers if they're still in purgatory. So while this is a book on heaven, and I don't dwell on purgatory at all, I felt there should be some mention of it at the beginning, and I was glad to. In fact, had the publisher not let me do that, I don't know if I would have even written this book, because I don't want to be one of those people who just, you know, give the impression that they believe in universal salvation or that they don't believe in purgatory. So
yep.
I think we handled it in a discreet way.
No, I agree. And it was interesting because it did come up the other night, and I've used the metaphor, I guess you would call it, when I talk about purgatory, that in our family weddings, my siblings and I, when we were planning the table arrangements, we would have a group of like less savory people, you know, the ones that might drink too much, the ones that always say the wrong thing at the wrong time. And so we would create a table just for those people. And I would usually be like back in a corner somewhere. And what I tell people about that, and I say that table doesn't exist in heaven. If we think about heaven as Jesus did, as being the banquet, you know, that table doesn't exist there. Nobody's going to be able to come in and ruin it for anybody else. So thank God for purgatory, that we have an opportunity to work out any of those attachments we may have.
If you don't mind, I'm going to steal that and plagiarize that from my book on purgatory. I'll have to give you credit for that, but that's a terrific little example. I like that very much.
Be my guest. Be my guest. And when it comes out, you can use it, as long as when you do, you call me and let me know when it's published.
I hope you'll have me on the show again.
No, absolutely. No, I think we've been together at least once, maybe twice before to talk about some of your other things. I always appreciate the words of wisdom that you have. And obviously, you've got another winner in this Christmas in heaven. Our guest today is Anthony DiStefano. We've been talking about his latest children's book called Christmas in Heaven. It's published by Sophia Institute Press, available at sophiainstitute.com. Locally here in the Philadelphia area, I'd encourage you to go visit our friends at the St. Jude Shop and pick it up there. If you have to go online, Sophia Institute. .com first, and then you know, the other retailers that are out there, I'm sure that they would appreciate their business. The show's an hour, Anthony. We're going to take a break here in a couple of minutes. I don't know if you have more.
I'd love to talk more about this, a little bit about the importance of the saints. It's always important to make people understand why it's so important to talk about the saints.
Yep, and I always, when the opportunity allows, especially if we have that extra time, I'm always curious as to how people got to where they are in life. And like we were saying earlier, you know, when you finally, you know, that morning when you wake up and you realize that you're actually doing God's will, life just becomes a whole new ball game. Our perspective changes and everything else. It's happened for me and a number of people that I've been able to encounter over the years. And we'd love to kind of hear
your
story.
Sure, I'd love to talk about that.
Okay. We've covered a lot about the book. Just checking with my engineer here. We're going to go ahead and take the break now. It's probably 2 minutes early, but that's all right. We'll take care of some business, and then when we come back, we can get into some of the personal stuff. For our listeners, thanks for being with us. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
My name is Mario DiAdamo, and I have been a faithful listener to Inner Sign Radio Ministry since 1990 and to Kathleen McCarthy as principal host since 2007. Hearing the witness of Kathleen and her guests has contributed greatly to my spiritual growth. They've educated me about the tenets of my Catholic faith by presenting lay and religious leaders discuss topics that help listeners create an informed Catholic conscience. I always encourage people who are in need of prayer and companionship to listen, call in, and become part of our radio listener family by joining thousands of other people praying for your intentions. I personally can attest to the power of the prayers from the ministry. Kathleen often reminds her listeners that you are never alone because the Lord is always with us. Through this Catholic radio and internet apostolate, the Lord is indeed with us in a very tangible way. Please share the good news as Kathleen takes a leap of faith and expanding to a two-hour program to reach many more people who need to experience the love of God. Thank you.
My friends, it is you who have stood lockstep with us in underpinning our apostolate by your powerful prayers and sacrificial financial giving. We have no doubt that you surely are the angels the Lord said he would send to us, and we are forever grateful. These are urgent times, and we need to proclaim the truth of God's Word, which alone can set us free. And we need to bring the Lord's healing power, love, and mercy out to a world that is in such desperate need. As your local Catholic radio apostolate, we are humbled and mightily blessed to have your loyal support. For our new listeners who would be interested in joining us, we can be reached at 610-527-2906 or on the web at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. Again, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. Interesting times in our world with all everything that went down over the last 24 hours. And, you know, we don't dwell a whole lot here on politics, but we've got people that are really close to this radio apostolate who have been affected by politics over the last couple of years. And, you know, I think a lot of folks associated with the radio apostolate woke up pretty happy this morning. I would have been happier, Anthony, if I didn't wake up with a case of gout that started yesterday. So the good news was the pain was bad enough that it kept me awake until the results were announced last night. So
that's it. That helped it for sure.
Yeah, always a silver lining. Always a silver lining. But our guest today is Anthony DeStefano. We've been talking about his book, Christmas in Heaven, published by Sophia Institute, and we covered a lot of the book in the first segment. And in the book, I think Anthony details at least 26 saints, all of which get a small entry in a glossary in the back of the book. But before we went to the break, you had mentioned that you wanted to talk a little bit more about the saints.
Sure, sure. Just, I mean, you know, especially our people who are not Catholic, they wonder why we Catholics love the saints, and they have a big misunderstanding about our relationship with the saints. But it's important to know about the saints for two reasons. The first, most important, is that they're our friends. They can help us. They're not up there in heaven twiddling their thumbs. You know, they're more alive, they're more powerful than we are because they're with God, who is the source of all life and power. So they can intercede for us with their prayers. So obviously, when we have a problem, you know, it's good for us to ask our family and our friends to pray for us. But who's closer to God than the saints? Nobody. So if one of your listeners right now is experiencing a big problem, you shouldn't hesitate to ask the saints to help you. And sometimes our Protestant brothers and sisters, they misunderstand us. We are not praying to the saints as if they're idols. We are asking the saints to pray for us. And by doing that, we're not taking away one iota from Christ's role as the one and only mediator between God and humanity. Just as we don't take away from his role as the one mediator when we ask our friends and family to pray for us. So the bottom line is that the saints can help us, and I encourage anybody out there with a problem, to go to the saints. That God, one of God's plans from the beginning is for us to help, to save us through us. He wants us to help each other. And so those saints in heaven are not doing nothing. They are more active than we are. And so they want to help us, and we should ask for help, and we shouldn't be surprised when we get help from asking them for help. The second reason why they're so important is because they're, of course, incredible role models for us. Christians are called to be Christ-like, but how do you do that? How do you be Christ-like in this world right now, in these crazy times? Of course, we have the New Testament, we have the teachings of the church as guides, but what the saints give us is something very concrete. How can you be Christ-like in your circumstances, in your life? The saints are examples of how to live out the gospel across different time periods, different cultures, different professions. So for example, if you were a lawyer today or a politician or a voter, okay, and you wanted to know how to act in this election, what would Christ be like in those roles? And if you want an answer to that, all you have to do is look at the life of St. Thomas More, who was a very powerful statesman and a lawyer, and you could see how someone can demonstrate maximum integrity when they're under, you know, political pressure from a government that's totally against everything they stand for, you know, when they're against the sanctity of marriage, the sanctity of life, etc. So that's very relevant today. And if you, for instance, if you're a doctor, you could look at the life of St. John Imola, who is a physician. If you're someone who lives in the city and feels empathy for the poor, you can look at St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta. So the diverse lives of the saints really provide inspiration and instruction for Christians in all walks of life, and particularly for children. Look, life is hard, and life can be lonely. But if you instill in your children not only a love for God and Jesus, but a love for his mother, Mary, and for the saints, then think about it. Those kids will never be alone. They will never be alone because they'll always have friends in heaven who they feel they can have a real relationship with. So by teaching your children about the saints, it's, again, you're giving them a protective armor against loneliness in life and against the feeling of helplessness and not having help. So I think it's very, very important. It's more important than we commonly think to teach our children about the saints.
Yeah, I've got a couple of grandkids, seven and eight, second grade and third grade, and they're in Catholic school, and the older one just had to, her name is Julia, and she had to get up. My daughter sent me a video. She had to get up in church. I guess the kids took turns. My saint is Saint Julia, and she lived here, and when she lived, and what have you, and I've tried to introduce them to the saints. There's some folks out there that make these little charms of saints that, you know, most of the kids now carry a backpack to school, and it'll have this little lobster claw on it that they can attach to the zipper. Mm. And, it gives me an opportunity to explain the saints to them. So we had the grandkids actually on All Saints Day because my daughter had to work. And gave my grandson Saint Joseph the Terror of Demons, and when he saw that title, you can just picture a 7-year-old kid that's really into Star Wars and those types of things, and you hear that title, Terror of Demons, that all of a sudden his ears perk up and he wants to learn more.
You know, it goes to really who we are as Christians. This doctrine of the communion of saints, and it goes to what heaven is all about, and the difference between, say, our religion and say a religion or a philosophy like Buddhism. You know, where, you know, Buddhism is very popular today, especially with the Hollywood crowd, and they believe that the greatest thing in life is to lose your identity, and then to have, and when you do that, you have, nirvana is a place where there's nothingness, and that's joy. Nothingness is joy. You lose your identity. That's the greatest good in those kinds of belief systems. But in the Christian belief system, our identity is good. When we go to heaven, we don't lose our identity. We become more of who we are. So that's why St. Joseph was a carpenter on earth. And so still in heaven, he's still connected in some way to the idea of building things and supporting things like the universal church. He's become more of who he is in heaven. When we die, and we, hopefully when we go to heaven someday, we will become more of who we are. And heaven is not less real than the life we're living right now. It's more real. Mm. It's not going to be less colorful. It's going to be more colorful. It's not going to be less active. It's going to be more active. More things are going to be going on. The saints are more different. And so it the whole teaching of the saints goes to why we are so different than other philosophies like Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism and Confucianism and all of those Eastern religions. So it goes very deep.
No, it does. You were talking earlier about the saints being the examples for us, and what you were just saying about that we become more real in heaven. And we're blessed here in the Philadelphia area at the Malvern Retreat House. They've now have a diocesan shrine to blessed, soon-to-be Saint Carlo Acutis. And, you know, here's a young guy that is so full of wisdom. And a couple of people that I know that were involved in putting the shrine together and talking about Carlo, one of his lines was that we're all born as originals, and most of us die as photocopies. And this idea that, and we talked a little bit about it before we went to the break, about, you know, each of us has this unique calling, and so when we hold up the saints as examples, we don't want to be another Teresa of Lisieux or Honoré or these other saints. We want to be who God created us to be, but the saints give us insight into how to figure that out and honor God by actually doing it.
That's right. And what you said there about there's some problem in the universe that only you can solve. There's some that you're made different, like a key that fits in a lock. And only one key has ever been created to unlock that lock. And every single human being who has more dignity than all the stars and planets put together, and this is why the pro-life movement is so important, every single person, no matter what their situation, has more dignity than the whole universe put together. Every single person is called to some mission that only they can do. And if they don't do it, that mission won't necessarily get accomplished.
That's right.
So part of our time on Earth is in prayerfully discerning and working out what it is that God is calling us to do that is so unique and so different than what anybody else can do.
That's
part of the joy and adventure of life is finding that out. And you can only find it out through prayer.
Excellent. So how did you end up where you are today?
Well, I know your listeners can tell after 3 minutes of hearing my voice that I'm from Brooklyn, New York. It's not too hard to figure that out. I grew up in Brooklyn in a, you know, not a very religious household. You know, I had three brothers and one sister, big family, lower middle class, but we weren't going to mass all the time. You know, my father and mother had drifted away from the faith. So I didn't have any goal to be a writer of religious books. I actually wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a heart surgeon. And for many years I studied. I went to science high school. I went to, you know, I majored in biology and chemistry. And you know, I would have become a doctor except for a couple of little things that got in the way, like organic chemistry and integral calculus. But I would have made it if it wasn't for them. So then after that didn't pan out, I went back to another love that I always had, which was to write. I love writing. So I tried my hand at writing, ghost writing, history books, writing a column for a newspaper. I tried writing everything, but none of those things really inspired me at all. Sometime in my mid-20s, though, I started to become committed again to my Catholic faith. You know, one of my siblings, my sister, was the only one in the family that went to church. And you know how it so often happens in families. All you need is one to pull the others along. So she started going to church again, and then it was me, and then the rest of my brothers and sisters, and finally even my father, who had been away from the church. So I got committed to the faith, and I even did a consecration of my life to Jesus through Mary, through the formula of St. Louis de Montfort. Mm. And after that, that's when I really started to discern what I was supposed to do, because I read a book called The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis, which really impressed me and showed me that, you know, here's a way that a person could write something meaningful, something that was funny, that wasn't some kind of a, you know, overly spiritual, overly religious type style, but could really speak to common people. And then it was like an epiphany. I realized that, you know, maybe God had given me the desire to be a doctor and the desire to be a writer for the same reason. Maybe what he was trying to tell me was, he wasn't trying to call me to be a surgeon, a heart surgeon, but he was calling me to be a healer of some kind, yeah. not with a scalpel, but with a pencil, with a writing, with my writing. And that's when it all came together. I came to the conviction that I was that my childhood desire to be a doctor was just my own misunderstanding of a calling to be some kind of a healer, and which I was to do through my books. And since that time, I haven't stopped writing books. I had never written anything that gotten published before I was in my 30s. And then once I started that, I've written close to 30 books now in the last 20-something years. And I think it's just because of what you said. I found what I was supposed to do, and I'm happy and fulfilled and all of those different things.
Yeah.
So well, that's my story.
Yeah, no, and one of the keys that you mentioned is it's similar to my own story and other people that I've talked to, is that consecration to Jesus through Mary.
Powerful.
Absolutely. I did it. I guess I was 36 years old. Initially through Maximilian Kolbe and the Knights of the Immaculata. And then
And then
it was probably like 5 years after that when I did the 33 days with St. Louis de Montfort. And I've talked to other people, and we were just having this conversation yesterday or the day before. There's an artist who paints, who's done a couple of pieces for us at our ministry. And, you know, she was an evangelical Protestant when somebody handed her a rosary, and she took the rosary and threw it on the pavement and crushed it, like a good, in her words, like a good evangelical would do. And she said, from that moment on, the Blessed Mother never let go. Mm. And, you know, sometimes I feel for our Protestant brothers and sisters, because you mentioned how they really look down upon us because of our interactions with the saints. And I think even more so with our Blessed Mother. And,
they misunderstand. They misunderstand. They think we're idolaters. They don't understand that. How did Jesus come to the world? He came through Mary. That's how he came. He came through, literally through Mary. And how did he even start his mission to the world? It was through Mary at Cana. So when we consecrate ourselves to Jesus through Mary, we're just imitating Christ. We're imitating exactly what Christ did. We're going through Mary to get to Jesus, and it doesn't involve idolatry, and we completely understand that Mary is a creature, just like us. However, she is special because she's the Mother of God, and she has, just like all the other saints, have special roles in heaven, and just like you yourself and I one day, if we get to heaven, we'll have a special role, so too Mary has a special role, and she has an incredibly special role because she's the Mother of God. So if you have listeners out there who are having particular problems in discerning what they're supposed to do with their lives, or they're having particular problems in their family, or with, you know, problems with the addictions that they can't beat, maybe they've tried everything. Well, why don't you try the rosary in a serious way, or try this consecration to Jesus through Mary? There are a few modern formulations that are very powerful as well, and give it a shot. It's like the nuclear option. If you're really having problems, do that, and things are going to start happening in your life.
Yeah, I've yet to met a person that has regretted consecrating themselves to Jesus through Mary. Yeah.
It makes you closer to Jesus. It doesn't take you. It makes you closer to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. It does not bring you out of the orbit of Jesus. That's the thing that's counterintuitive to Protestants. It makes you a better, closer Christian.
Amen. I think there's a children's book in there somewhere about consecration.
Well, you know, I wrote a book called Our Lady's Wardrobe and Our Lady's Picture Book, which are both about Mary. But yes, I would like to tackle this subject even just for adults to make them understand this a little bit better, this subject. Because the more people who actually do this, the stronger church we're going to have.
So, being from Brooklyn, Mets or Yankees?
I grew up, my father was a Brooklyn Dodger fan, so when they moved to Los Angeles, he could never root for the Yankees. So we all became Met fans. But as it turns out, this year, nobody won.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's interesting because we've got some involved in a ministry here that we're involved a lot with people that struggle with addiction, myself included. And we've got a Vincentian priest that likes to come down and hang out with us, Father Michael Shea. And he's a New York boy himself, and he shows up every Tuesday night in his Mets gear. So. Yeah.
Well, addiction is a serious thing. You know, it's the devil uses addiction because what it does, addictions of all kinds paralyze people. They prevent us from doing the good. It's like if you were in battle and with a terrible enemy, and all of a sudden you couldn't even move your arms and you couldn't even lift your sword or your gun. You just your hands were tied behind your back. That's what addiction does. And it's very hard to break those chains. So you need a lot of spiritual firepower as well as the help of therapists and experts and things like that for all these different kinds of addictions.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I recovery from alcoholism for over 30 years and a bunch of friends that, you know, whether it was alcohol or drugs. And, you know, you were talking about, and we've been talking about trying to figure out what it is that God wants you to do. And I had an epiphany a number of years ago. You know, I thought about all the horrible things that I had done when I was active in the addiction. And then, you know, you come to, and I realize now that probably one of the greatest sins was the sin of omission and not figuring out what God wanted me to do and doing it. But, you know, time has kind of taken care of that. Everything that he allowed me to experience, I'm able to use now to benefit others. And, you know, the phrase we use, you know, share our experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, it's been such a gift to me, especially in recent years.
The idea that God pulls good out of bad is so powerful. And even with all the terrible things that happen through addictions. But, you know, people come up to me because, you know, I hear all these terrible stories because I've written books, and so they'll say, you know, my child died or what am I, you know, I hear the most horrible stories. And the only thing you can really tell these people, especially when they've gone through addictions or their children have addictions, heroin addictions, God somehow pulls good out of bad. And how do we know that he can do that? You got to look at the crucifixion. What is the worst evil that has ever happened in the history of the world? It wasn't homicide. It wasn't even genocide. The worst evil ever committed was deicide, the murder of God. the crucifixion of Christ wasn't just the killing of a person. It was the murder of God. Worst thing that could ever happen. But what happened 3 days later? The resurrection. The resurrection just wasn't the coming alive of one man. The resurrection represented the opening of the gates of heaven. So now all of us can rise again and live again in heaven forever. And that's the best thing that ever happened. So if God was able to pull the best thing out of the worst thing, then he could certainly take the evils that happen in our life and pull some kind of good out of them, even if we don't see them at the time. So even a person who's been through all this abuse and all the things that alcohol abuse or drug abuse or pornography and all the terrible things that come with that, God is able to transform someone's life so that they will be able to help others because of the terrible experiences that they've had. And that's and you know, it's one of the most hopeful things, I think, about our beautiful faith.
Yeah. Now, I could not agree more. Alphonsus Liguori wrote the treatise, Uniformity with God's Will. And everything is, you know, God either wants it to happen or he allows it to happen in order to bring about a greater good. And I stumbled on that a number of decades ago, and another author, Dan Berker, wrote a great book about it. And I think when we come to understand that, you know, God doesn't necessarily want these things to happen, but he allows them to happen in order to bring about a greater good for us to grow in some virtue, perhaps, that when we have that perspective, it's a game changer. You go from being miserable all the time to actually once in a while thanking God for some of the bad stuff that happens to us.
Yes. He's not a sadistic puppeteer up in heaven poking pins in us.
Yeah.
So he never stands in the way of free will. So he will allow a lot of bad things to happen, knowing that he will somehow, with the mysterious workings of his providence, pull some kind of good out of it. That doesn't mean that it's good that you did the bad things, because God could presumably pull good out of good things too. But it means that if in this life, this hard life, we sin and we fall and we do bad things, or bad things happen to us, that God can still turn that around for us.
Very good. We've just about killed the hour. My guest today has been Anthony DeStefano. We started out the show talking about his book, Christmas in Heaven. Just a beautiful children's book illustrated by Bernadette Carstensen. Published by SophiaInstitute.com or Sophia Institute Press, available. It's SophiaInstitute.com. Locally here, run over and see our friends at the St. Jude Shop and pick it up there. Anthony, it's been a pleasure again to be with you.
Thank you
for the time and all the insights.
I appreciate it. And I've got four books coming out in the next year, three children's books and one book for adults. And I hope you have me back for every single one of them.
No, absolutely.
Okay.
My pleasure. Thank you,
Anthony.
Thank you. All right. God bless. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
So once again, God has seen fit to put another winner in our path to be here in the 5 o'clock hour. And I was sharing the other night how, you know, 9.5 years of doing this show in the 5 o'clock hour has allowed me to learn so much about people and our Catholic faith. And it's not every week where I have the ability to read the entire book for some of these authors that we have on, or delve completely into a topic before I have them on. But it does force me each week to do the legwork so that I can have intelligent conversations with these folks. And as a result, it has helped me to grow deeper in my faith and hopefully allow me to share a little bit of that with you. We had a interesting time on Saturday night. One of these days, I want to get my friend Father Wackerman on the show and talk a little bit about soul ties. That was what the talk was on Saturday night. And apparently quite a few people were affected by it. And, you know, some of these things that we have in our past that we need to break with. But, again, it's been great to be with you on this Wednesday, especially on the day after the – you know, historic election and the results that we saw yesterday. I've heard some of the, you know, some people claim that it may be the greatest turnaround in the history of man. I don't know if we go that far. It's probably definitely the greatest in the history of the United States, you know, coming up on, 250 years, and it'll be President Trump. When we celebrate those 250 years in 2026, God willing, and nothing happens to him between now and then. But as he said, and like I said, they got this gout attack going on, so it was up to hear his speech last night and the talk about unity and the healing that needs to be done in this country. And we're all good people. And we may have different ideas on how different things need to be done or how we can get to the results that we need. But I keep hearkening back, and I've had a conversation with a number of people over the past couple of months, and a direct result of this show, having Jason Jones on was kind of life-changing when he, you know, it was his book, The Great Campaign Against the Great Reset. Paul Zuccarelli, when he was on back in August, and the book he and Jesse Romero wrote, I think it was One Church, One God, One Faith, something like that. And, you know, sometimes I think we look to these politicians, we look to our church leaders to solve the problems. And what both of them wrote about in their books, and I really spend time thinking about these days, is that it they're not going to fix it. Kamala Harris couldn't fix it. Donald Trump's not going to fix it. We're going to fix it one person at a time. When we wake up every morning and do our best to love everybody that we come into contact with each day. That's what this show's called, what the world needs now. And we all know what that is. It's love. And it's funny, 9.5 years into doing the show, and I kept the same track as the same title that Kathleen had long before I got here. And even used her intro up until a few months ago when I finally asked Dennis to create one with my name in it. And but that's the bottom line. Whether it's Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Donald Trump, whether it's Pope Francis or Benedict the 16th or whoever the next pope is going to be, whether it's the particular bishop that we have here in this archdiocese or other bishops around the country, they can certainly teach us and try to lead by example. But the way we change the world is to love everybody that we come into contact with, even those that we may not particularly care for. When we do that, sky's the limit, and that's when the world's going to change. So once again, on this Wednesday, I want to praise and thank God for all of you and all that you do that allows me to be here on Wednesdays. And I do. I look forward to being here each week and look forward to being here with new guests again next Wednesday. And until then, my prayer is that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. Take care, and God bless you.